Warning, Weird West Radio contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
See, in this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns, and those who dig. You dig.
What can I do for you?
I would like to go on a hunt.
This will be one of the biggest hauls anyone has ever seen. Where are we going, though? So you're a God-fearing man yourself.
Why fear God?
You don't know. You'll see.
Welcome, everyone, to Weird West Radio, Rain Man Digital's exclusive Western film, television, and media podcast. I am Michael, your host. I'm in the studio with David. Hello, Dave.
Hello, everybody.
Okay, so today you and I are going to be discussing Butcher's Crossing, which is a 2022 American Western film directed by Gay Pulsky, based on a novel by John Williams. The film stars Nicolas Cage as a hardened buffalo hunter leading an expedition into the Colorado wilderness in search of a massive untouched herd. It was released in limited theaters and on demand in 2023 and received generally mixed reviews, with particular attention given to its philosophical ambitions and bleak tone.
Yep.
Now, this is a continuation of our Nicolas Cage Western coverage. This is two of three. We have one more after this. If you're new to the podcast, you can find most of our podcast episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search Weird West Radio. Apple Podcast users, please be sure to leave us a review and rate the podcast. This is a movie that I was really uncertain about. The trailer looked intriguing, but also wasn't quite sure, is this going to turn into yet another frenetic ADD Cage performance, or is this going to be something a little more grounded, a little more serious in tone? And in fact, the movie was that. This was more grounded in terms of content. And I will qualify that in a minute. Once we discuss, people will get what I'm talking about here. The synopsis: a young Harvard dropout joins a group of buffalo hunters on an expedition into the American frontier, only to confront the brutal realities of nature, human greed, and the psychological cost of unchecked ambition. Nicolas Cage films remain unpredictable, but
that's one way of putting it.
But what distinguishes his later career performances is not simply eccentricity, as we had discussed in our last discussion, but a willingness to embed himself within existentially weighted material. In Butcher's Crossing, Cage's presence is less performative spectacle and more an extension of the film's philosophical terrain. So there's contemplation. So here, in this movie, Cage does not dominate the film. During our first discussion, we went through various films, different styles in Cage's career, and we left off with this idea that Cage plays into eccentricities. But in this movie, it takes a very hard left turn. And he becomes less eccentric in himself, but the movie takes over for his eccentricity.
Yes.
So he's more of the subtle grounding element. And the movie itself is this psychological roller coaster. So it's interesting what the director was attempting to do. Nicolas Cage's character becomes inseparable from the landscape. You know, another force driven by instinct, consumption, and eventual collapse. And the performance aligns with the film's larger mediation, which is on the limits of human will when confronted with an indifferent natural world. And what makes Butcher's Crossing more than just a traditional Western, and this is what I usually look for when deciding what we're going to throw on our list of Westerns to cover, I want to pick movies that are unique in its intent. Sometimes we'll cover something that you just have to cover, you know, like the latest, let's say, Kevin Costner film. But then there might be movies that we choose because of what they're doing. Is it unique? Is it something that's not utilized all the time? And Butcher's Crossing is one of those movies, the latter of that. It's something that you don't often see in Westerns. Rather than being just a straight up traditional Western, you know, men hunting buffalo in the frontier, the film's sustained engagement with psychic trauma is really where the film starts to dissect what is happening and the effects of rabid, unbridled, brutal hunting occurs and what it does to the human mind, both human and non-human, by the way, which is also a very unique aspect of this movie. When we speak of psychological trauma, I think most people, David, will probably think, well, they're talking about the humans in the story, right? Of course, psychological trauma, but it's actually dual serving. They're not just talking about the psychological waste that becomes the human mind when you're brutal, but also the ones who are being brutalized.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about other humans, creatures, animals, buffalo in this particular scenario. So at its core, it's not simply a story about, you know, survival or even ambition, but about the psychological disintegration that follows when human desire exceeds any moral or ecological boundary. Because that's another strong element to this movie. There's a moral element to it. Not telling you what's moral and what's not moral, it's posing moral questions.
Yes, and that's what makes it really, in my opinion, one of the bonuses or one of the pros of this movie is like it doesn't just stand on a soapbox. It that's not what its job is. Its job is to actually give us some time to think. And when it comes to kind of like,
it's making us answer those questions.
Yeah, it's making us answer the questions. It's posing what we as the audience want to think. In a lot of ways, this movie reminds me of another Nicolas Cage film that I saw, which is Pig.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's such a good movie.
It's not as defined as Pig. Like I think Pig's a little bit more polished than this Nicolas Cage film, but like it's doing the same legwork where it's kind of like,
it's similar. Yeah.
It's similar in the frame that it's not going to be bombastic. It's not going to be like Nicolas Cage wide-eyed, crazy, not the bees type of moment. This is going to be kind of like a type of Nicolas Cage that makes you want to stop and think. And you're going to have those moments in the film where it's like uncomfortable for you. And there are moments in this film,
putting it lightly,
there are moments in this film where I'm like, okay, I need to take a break.
Well, I will just say it right from the start. If you are an animal lover,
oh my God,
this movie is incredibly hard to watch.
Yes.
I'm not saying you shouldn't watch it because there's a lesson here. I don't want to say a moral lesson because I don't feel like it's telling you how to think or what to think. It's simply showing you what has happened. And then here's the consequences of what we just laid out for you. So in that regard, David, I do think it's a strong movie because I'm not a fan of movies that point the finger at you and tell you how to think. Give me the evidence. Let me, as a viewer, weigh the pros and cons of what you're saying. And then by the end of the movie, I will probably understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Remember that art is subjective. Let your audience think for themselves and come up with their own interpretation of what you put forth, because in a lot of ways as artists, that's how you learn to fine tune your skills. Because when you learn, when you hear people criticize your art, it should be looked at as a lens of not, well, they suck because they're saying that I'm bad. No. And you should look at criticism and say, okay, what can I do for my next project then? What can I do for my next art piece? As an artist, you should never be defined by just one piece of art. You should be defined by your totality of your career. So that's why when I see people, like say nitpick a certain film and then think that, oh, this actor, this director, this is what they're known for and stick with it. I'm like going, no, you're doing a disservice to that person. That's why I love Nicolas Cage, because people automatically superficially think, oh, he's crazy. He's wild. Wide eye, you know, I'm a vampire type of moment. But they forget that Nicolas Cage is one of the best actors out there. They forget things like Living Las Vegas or Raising Arizona
or Face Off.
that's crazy Nicolas Cage.
No, I get what you're saying. And when we say art, I know some people like to push back. Well, movies aren't all art. You're right. So depending on how you want to look at it, you know, Nicolas Cage could either be a craftsman or an artist. And in my opinion, there are actors that are craftsmen. And I don't think that would I don't think being either or makes you better or worse, but there are some craftsmen and there are some actors who are artists. And Nicolas Cage is the latter. He is an artist. And I think that's the reason why some people don't know how to take him. He's an eccentric artist at times. He's like that on the red carpet. He's like that in interviews. Also, he plays into it a lot. I mean, that's very clear. I think he has fun with the audiences. But yeah, so go ahead. What were you saying, Dave? I cut you off.
Well, that's my point about like Butcher's Crossing is like when people see Butcher's Crossing, they're thinking that Nicolas Cage is going to be crazy and wild. And they see the film. And the film is like, trust me, it's out there. It's crazy. Especially when you're dealing with the genocide of like all the bison.
Yeah, dude. Fuck.
And like people don't understand that American history, no one talks a lot about like the extinction of the buffalo.
Pretty much brought them to extinction.
And that's the cost of Manifest Destiny. And that's what I loved about this movie is because it brought it front and center, not saying that Manifest Destiny was wrong, but showing the idea that
the consequences of the ideology,
all this industrial, all this quote unquote, I guess you could say capitalism type of mentality that we have,
early industrial capitalism. I think that's a way you would say it.
That comes at a cost, and the cost is nature.
Yeah.
It is the environment.
Yeah. That's something we don't talk about a lot. Taylor Sheridan does in the more contemporary Western filmmaker circles, where he includes nature as part of the consequences of westward expansion. Now, Taylor Sheridan isn't, a radical liberal or a radical conservative. He's kind of a moderate, and I even hate labeling him a moderate. I think he's just an artist that has an idea and he has a worldview, and his worldview is very closely aligned to cowboy ethics.
Yes.
And the cowboy ethics is something that absolutely includes the respect of the environment and nature. Early Westerns, though, don't depict that, because you got to remember, Westerns are largely American myth. They were created as a way to create a national identity in many respects. So Westerns are myth. They're not actual historical documents that are accurately describing the history of the West. Whereas nowadays we have more postmodern, maybe even revisionist Westerns that go in there and they have something ideological to say that pushes back on the early 20th century Western films. And a lot of that has to do with westward expansion, right? We all know what happened to the indigenous, but we often forget in our books, our movies, literature, the other victim, and that is the animal.
Yes.
And that's what this movie does so well. Where this film excels is how it deeply delves into the psychic trauma experienced by both the bison and humans. A trauma brought on by relentless industrial scale slaughter, and the violence, this is what's really interesting about it, is not framed as heroic or even necessary. It is excessive. It's yes. repetitive and absolutely numbing. So the prolonged killing of the buffalo herd transforms what initially appears as opportunity into something closer to ritualized annihilation.
Well, that's the thing that I thought was like really interesting in once you get to the point where the butchering does happen, and they do a wonderful job of actually showing just that numbing effect that you mentioned, where it's like Will and Schneider are butchering these animals that Miller is just killing rampantly, like no mercy.
You laugh because it's so unethical.
Mike, they
that it becomes comedic at times. And I think that's the point.
Yeah. Because here's the thing. I actually had to read this to make sure. But like Miller ends up killing 4,500 buffalo. 4,000, Mike. One man kills them.
You got to remember, just because you're killing an animal, this is different than killing an animal out of necessity. You know, for food. I mean, man has done that since the dawn of time. People need to eat. That's different. That's the circle of life. But when you have unprovoked, excessive killing, like we saw in this movie, there is a numbing effect. But also, there's a psychological damage as well, because you are taking life. And there is a moment in the movie where they do frame the buffalo, the bison, as almost like, I don't want to say the divine, this mythological, majestic being that's been here long before anyone. And yet here we are with these weapons, mowing them down like they mean nothing. Now, there was a study done years ago that I always found interesting. I read it in high school, so it was a long time ago. And it was about the slaughterhouses where they kill cows.
Yes.
And it was a psychological study done on regular people. Okay, the people that actually have to kill the cows every day with those little pins.
Yes.
Well, those people aren't normal, it turns out.
Yeah, they're Javier Bardem.
Little country right. from old man. I forgot he uses that, doesn't he? He yeah. uses the
he just the walks cow up to thing. And yeah, then he just
that's
kills them.
Right, I forgot that's the weapon he uses. But that was the point of the study, showing that casual killing by the hundreds every day takes a toll on someone.
Yeah.
And that person at the end of that is no longer normal. There's something severely wrong with that person. And this isn't a discussion on bad and good. This is just a discussion, or I should say the article, the report was not to throw stones and judge people. It was to show you what the brutal act of just killing a life, not even a human life, does to someone after doing it for weeks on end by the hundreds.
Yeah. And that's that in itself, it's not about, I'm glad you pointed out, it's not about pointing out good and evil. It's about pointing out the cost of humanity, one's humanity.
The cost of taking a life.
Yeah. Because like,
life is precious. Think about this from a philosophical, non-metaphysical standpoint for a moment. And I've had this discussion with my son recently because he's going through all types of existential thoughts because it's just the mood of the age that we're in right now.
Yes, it's the nature of the beast.
And he's like, what's the purpose of all this? Like, why are we here? And I said, why do you need to know why we're here? The fact that we are here. Okay, let's say you don't believe in God. Fine. It's still miraculous that we're here. We're on a fucking rock floating in space. And yet you and I right now are here talking. There are creatures walking around, part of the circle of life. Coyotes, wolves, buffalo, moose, deer, lions, tigers, and bears. All here at the exact same moment. That's miraculous.
Yes.
When you think about it.
When you think about it.
And to just take that life as if it's not miraculous, that says something about the human condition.
Yeah, it says something about the human themselves, because like, think about like in terms of the story, Miller obsesses over the fact of simply getting back home and bringing in the largest haul. That's what he obsesses over. Nicolas Cage's character, Miller, he wants to be known to bring in the largest haul of furs, of bison. And that's it. And in that regard, that shows how much humanity Miller is losing, killing all these buffalo. Because at the end of the day, he's only focused on one sole thing. He's a machine at that point.
He kind of robbed himself of his own soul.
Of his own soul.
That's what it seemingly is the idea.
And it's why my favorite part of the film, and I mentioned this off air with you, my favorite part of the film is when toward the climax of the film, when Schneider ends up dying, going off a cliff with a lot of the furs, and you have Will and you have Nicolas Cage's character looking over the thing, and they just have this deadpan, don't care that someone just died.
Yeah, complete indifference.
Complete indifference. Someone that they've been working with for the past months.
But that goes to show you what the numbing actually did. It created just this nihilistic indifference.
And it's that at that moment, I'm like going, that is the best way Polsky could actually put his, give his,
frame the idea. Yeah.
What his story is about. And right there was perfect.
Yeah. Well, that's what distinguishes the film. That's what we keep saying, because that is the strength of this movie, is that you have these creatures, the bison, they're not just there for background. They're not there as a stepping stone for Miller's story. They are actual subjects of suffering. And the hunters are not triumphant.
By far, no.
If you're just going to watch the inciting incident and possibly even the first act of the movie, you might think, oh, this is about Miller getting his due. This is about Miller proving himself, along with the Harvard dropout, that they can do what others have not. But that's far from what the movie's about. These hunters are not ever framed as triumphant. They become psychologically eroded, and also they become subjects of suffering as well. So the graphic violence and the senseless killing actually provoke what I would say is a reflection, not just on greed, but on the shared space of suffering between human and animal, where you get this collapse of any real clear or clean moral distinction between hunter and hunted. And this is something that gets ignored by others when discussing this film, and there are quite a bit of reviews out there on this movie, but the one thing they're not really getting into is its psychological dissection of the effects on people who are entrenched in death.
Yes.
Not death of fellow humans, but rather the holistic synergism of beast and man. You know, this idea that we are doing damage to ourselves every time we abuse the environment. There's a psychic toll, I guess you can say. So we might not be aware of it, but the cost is steep, and any sane man would unravel under such brutality. And that's what the movie is attempting to convey, because this film's time period takes place during the time of westward expansion. As you were mentioning, Dave, we know that commercial buffalo hunting had become industrialized by this point. So clearly the director and or writer of this film were looking to connect early industrial capitalism to a type of moral decay. So what the writer and director were doing, essentially, they were situating this narrative at a point where human ambition, I would say, essentially outpaces ethical or ecological limits. And Something that I found even more interesting is that the characters in this film, Will Andrews and especially Miller, become aware of the damage they are doing. There's a moment in the movie where they feel the weight of the slaughter. They know what they're doing is, air quotes, wrong.
Yes.
Possibly even what they're feeling is the weight of their sin against nature, the earth, and even themselves, because the damage they're doing is damage to themselves. So even the buffalo now, and this is one of the saddest moments of the movie, David, and where I say, if you're an animal lover, you're gonna fucking have a lot of difficulty getting through this movie, because there are scenes, specifically one that I'm thinking of, where the buffalo even know what's happening is just wrong. This is one of those films I'd consider to be broadly existential in formal strategy.
Oh, easily, yes.
But there are moments where even a type of nihilism enters the narrative space. So in terms of form, there is what I would call an affective existentialism that seeks to capture a metaphysical restlessness, but there's a passive nihilism or indifference that invades the diegetic space. And we see these first hints through the buffalo themselves. There is an acceptance that nothing can be done. They just look right at Miller and the other hunters and just let themselves get shot. Yes. There is no fight. There's no running. They just stare quietly as if they know what their fate is.
Yes.
And there is an actual indifference in their own death.
And the scary part, Mike, because I've read articles on this too. The same thing that they did to the buffalo in the movie is the same thing that basically cows go through.
It's so brutal, dude.
Where if you go to like slaughterhouses, it's not pretty. And they've done studies that show cows that actually have gone into the slaughterhouse seem to almost just have this defeated look when they get in. And it's the saddest thing. And just like you said, is like, it really brings into question about what humanity's place in this world should be.
Yeah. Well, I think as we continue to march forward in this technological age, there is a risk that we start forgetting nature and the importance of animals and how they are a part of our lives, that they share this planet with us. And I do think at the center of this movie, that is probably the message, because you bring up, you know, cattle, you bring up cows, but also, I mean, pigs. There has been so many studies done that these poor pigs actually know while they're waiting to be slaughtered. They already know, because they have done these studies where the pigs are watching their fellow pigs being killed and they start screaming in their cages because they know they're next.
Yes. And listen, you're talking to an islander who loves me some pig. And I have done some very messed up shit when it comes to actually cooking.
It's our culture. It's my culture too.
It's culture, you know, but there is something to be said about being able to maintain your humanity enough to do what people have dubbed the cycle of life.
Yes. And there is a difference. What you're describing and what I said about culture, our cultures, because the Hispanic culture is very similar. I mean, cow tongue, cow eyes, cow brain,
dude,
menudo, like on paper, that's all incredibly brutal, but that's also different. That's a part of life. It's not excessive. What this movie's talking about, this isn't a movie that's advocating zero footprint.
Yes.
This isn't a movie that's advocating, let's stop hunting. That's not the case. What this movie is simply trying to frame and push forward is the excessive brutality, the excessive brutal ways that we treat these creatures.
And I like the way you put it. This movie is about humanity's need for excess.
Yes.
To overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
To be a tryhard.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And it goes against reason. And that's another idea I think the movie's pushing forward, because oftentimes people will argue, oh, well, there is a difference between man an animal. Man has reason. Animals do not. But against all reason, Miller persists in his greedy quest. So we're going to use reason as that phenomenon that separates man from beast. Well, okay, well, the movie's clearly saying, well, Miller, who's a human being, has zero reason, because there's a point in the film where they kill so many buffalo, they can't even bring back all the hides, but they keep killing anyway. They keep killing anyway. They know they have no means to transport it.
And it goes to like what I brought up earlier. Miller's reasoning is solely because he wants to be known as the guy that brings back the largest haul. And that is not that, that's like illogical when you think about it. When people say they
didn't even have the means to do so.
Exactly. He didn't have the means to do so. So it's like, there's no, and I love the fact that you brought up that word. There's no reason, real, true, logical reason why Miller would do that. And it sounds like a fantastical, illogical thing, but in actuality, how many people out there in the world right now think like that?
Well, that's what I was thinking when I was watching this movie. I had scribbled down on my notepad that in some ways it seems like the director is asserting that humanity is the aberration.
Yes.
And what separates us from animals is our knowing cruelty. Because we know. That was very clear in the movie. They all knew what they were doing was wrong.
Oh, yeah.
All of them.
But they hide it in their own, quote unquote, illogical ways. I mean, even take the other characters into stock. The one guy starts poisoning Schneider because he burns his book. And I get it. He burned a Bible. Okay. But again, think about logic and reason.
Indifference towards life.
Indifference towards life. You're going to murder someone for burning a book that can be easily replaced.
Yeah. Again, showing that humanity may be the ones that do not have actual reason, as we like to proclaim.
Exactly.
Or if we do have reason and yet we don't listen to the rationale, what does that say about us?
And then in the end, when you think about it, what does Will say? I've seen what I've needed to see. So what does he do? He goes back into the forest. He goes back into nature. And I'm like going, oh, is he going to just be like, is he going to be like Nicolas Cage's character and kill more things?
Yeah, it's that whole aspect that we've discussed is incredibly powerful. It is well done in the movie. Done. It's a good thought to push forward. And in a time where we talk about so many different types of politics in our film and media, and then we take things like this, the killing of creatures, the indifference towards animal life, and we kind of put it to the back burner. Like, it's not important, but this is just as important to our planet as every other political ideology, the things that people try to talk about in their movies.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So beyond its visceral imagery, the film does, in fact, operate within a sustained atmosphere of existential dread. And this is where the form and style really comes through. The editing choices, the long, deliberate takes, which normally I'm not a fan of those like I used to be in years past, but only because the people that do them don't do it correctly. So it's not about the tool. It's about who's using the tool, yeah. I guess is how I should say it. Because we just recently talked about the movie Train Dreams.
Yes.
Train Dreams is an example of taking a lot of the things that the director here was doing, Polsky was doing in this movie. Train Dreams is an expert version of that in a lot of ways in terms of style and form.
Yes.
Different plot, different idea, although there are similar themes dealing with environmental holistics.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. Everything's connected. But the landscape, you know, vast, indifferent, and increasingly hostile in these shots, it does not simply serve as backdrop, but almost as a mirror of internal collapse, what almost foreshadows what Will goes through. That's his name, right?
Yes, yeah. Will.
What Will goes through at the end, you know, this internal collapse, like he gives up. And as the hunt progresses in the movie, purpose gives away to obsession, which is, again, speaks to what Will does at the end. Survival seemingly becomes indistinguishable from destruction, and even identity erodes under repetition and isolation. And that, again, is a key takeaway from what you just said about Will at the end of the movie. His identity has eroded. And what did you just say? Is it, what, is he going to go back into the wilderness and be like Miller now? His identity has ceased.
Yes.
And he's almost taken on Miller's identity. And he's now going back into the wilderness, repetition, and isolation.
Yes.
So this is very much existential. The characters are also consumed by... There is an idea of this pursuit of meaning.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's as clear as the indifference of nihilism or indifferent nihilism, but there is that pursuit of meaning. And perhaps they're trying to say that indifferent nihilism can overcome actual meaningful steps in life, actually finding meaning, and gradually you're stripped away of anything resembling ethical grounding, perhaps. But there's a lot, and these are the reasons why I like movies like this, because I like discussions where we can pose questions ourselves and say, well, this is what they're possibly doing. This is what they might be doing. And that's not to say that this movie isn't concrete in its intent, because it is concrete in its intent, yeah. But it's also not spoon-feeding you answers.
It's funny you bring up Train Dreams, because, yeah, me and you, we brought that up off air about Train Dreams, just because it's so fresh in our minds. I think about it now, in a movie like Train Dreams, and then taking that narrative and comparing it to this narrative, it's really interesting to seeing what, that they're almost very similar, but they're both veering in different directions.
Yeah. They're trying to say this. They're trying to say similar things, but differently.
Mm-hmm. And I think that basically that is where you can see the cracks in Butcher's Crossing, because like Train Dreams is just like you said, it is fine tuned to perfection with their shot selection, with their choice of like certain pieces of dialogue, their timing, and Train Dreams does it perfectly. Butcher's Crossing tries to get there, but there's almost like this sense of there's certain shots that linger a little too long. Like you could easily get a couple frames out, and it feels like in Butcher's Crossing, they're taking more of like a there will be blood type of timing.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. There's nothing wrong with abstractions in a movie,
yeah.
But you have to anchor your abstractions more frequently.
Yes.
The more you use those abstractions. Train Dreams is a good example of a director and writer that avidly worked to continually throughout the movie anchor those more abstractions, those metaphysical moments. So when I talk about abstractions, I'm talking about the metaphysical. The metaphysical that I'm talking about is the feelings, the things that are not tangible, that a filmmaker, director is trying to bring to the forefront through sound design, through framing, through long takes, cinematography, if you will. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about the metaphysical. And Train Dreams does a much better job anchoring those aspects, whereas there are times in Butcher's Crossing where we get lost in the metaphysical.
Yes.
In the metaphysical musings, the emotions that we're supposed to be feeling. Is that what you're,
yes,
you're getting at? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would agree. Now, David, I did see some similarity to The Old Way. So in The Old Way, that film interrogates the fragility of moral frameworks, I believe is what we went over.
Yes.
But here, morality is not anchored in, I guess you can say, interpersonal relationships.
No, not at all.
Like with Ruth in The Old Way, but
yeah,
in the illusion of human dominion over nature. That's what morality is more or less anchored to in this one. So would you agree with that, that there is a moral framework there that's similar to the old way?
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a very valid point with the difference between the old way and Butcher's Crossing is the fact that old way is more personal. You have the statement in the old way was Nicolas Cage's character in that one loses his morality because he lost his wife. And his wife was the anchor, the moral anchor that basically formed their family, kept their daughter sane, kept him sane. In Butcher's Crossing, there is no moral anchor. It's almost kind of like this mentality that basically it's what I would think of is like an excuse mentality. I'm going to do this because of this.
That's a good way of saying it, David, because that's why I said morality is not anchored in interpersonal relationships, but in the illusion of human dominion over nature.
Yeah. And that's what I think is actually, it's an interesting parallel between the old way and this one that you bring up, because it's kind of like, It's why I love our discussions on movies like this, because it brings up so many philosophical elements of what it means to be human. Because what is it that makes our human morals? You know, the things that basically bring us. In the old way, it made complete sense to me. Like, yeah, the wife was the moral anchor to Nicolas Cage's character, and you can tie that to the real world where it's like, there are people who, when they meet someone, they utterly change, and their moral compass changes because of the person they meet. And here in Butcher's Crossing, it's more or less kind of like society is the moral compass. So like Miller's drive to be the best, you know, hunter, to bring in the most skins, to be rich, to bring in the most money. Same thing with Will. Will goes on this out of like, I think it was the reason why he went on this was because he had this romanticized naive ideal of what going out into the West was like. And then you have, I forgot the cook's name, but the cook that they hire, he's totally driven by religious beliefs. So when his religious beliefs in this book is challenged, he lashes out.
Yeah. It seems like we are dealing, now that we're getting towards the end of our analysis here, it does seem like we're dealing more than anything with descriptions of meaning and purpose.
Yeah. The interesting one to me, now that I think about it, is actually the question, the character of, what's his name? Because it eludes me right now. Schneider.
Yeah. He was one of my favorite characters. I love when characters are written in a way that their end is not what you expected.
Yeah. I was like trying to, throughout the movie, you could see the quote unquote, you know, drive of each character.
Mm-hmm.
Schneider seemed to be the most normal of all the characters. Like,
yeah,
he had the logic.
Yeah, but that's why he was such a well-written character, because he, for a lack of a better word, he was initially characterized as a bit of an asshole.
Yes.
And I think that was on purpose. The writer probably wanted us to think that this guy was going to be some villain. He was going to be an obstacle. He was going to be an antagonist. And he was, yes, he was an obstacle, but not in the way that we thought.
Because if you think about it, okay, Schneider burns the Bible. and that was a dick move. I get that. It was a dick move. But when you actually, because I rewatched this film before we actually covered this finally, I noticed like Schneider's reasoning is all logic. He doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to kill when he gets to a certain point. He's the one that brings up, you know, maybe we should stop killing all the buffalo. We can't really carry all this shit.
He's the one who ends up having the moral compass. And we did not expect that.
Yes.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite parts about the script.
And I was like cracking up. I was like, oh my God, Schneider's the logical one out of everybody. You would expect it out of Will, especially since, you know, they touted that Will is this college educated, you know, individual. He wants to see what the romance of the West is all about. Okay. He's the one that should bring in logic. No, it's Schneider.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. You know, and when you look at this illusion that we're talking about, the illusion of, you know, morality being anchored to human dominion over nature, you can see this and we'll just use Miller since he is the main lead of the film here. But if you see how Cage's Miller embodies this illusion, what does he believe? He believes in the hunt as purpose. He frames domination as something necessary. And he also equates endurance with meaning. Yet the deeper the expedition goes, the more this entire framework ends up collapsing. So in the end, the film poses what I would say is a very critical question. What happens when the structures that give human action meaning, like progress, conquest, survival, let's say, are revealed to be empty or even self-destructive? That's really the core question being pushed forward.
Yeah, that's how I see it too.
So let's talk about the cinematography. The man in charge of the cinematography was David Gallego. He did a decent job. I actually enjoyed much of the visuals. It was, again, one of the strengths of the movie. It seems like his visual strategy was looking to emphasize the naturalness of nature. So you had wide open compositions, which is very familiar for anyone watching Westerns. That isn't a new concept.
Yes.
Heavy reliance on natural light. The environment dominates the frame. And this does, in fact, align with Gallego's style. If you look at other work he has done. So you have this landscape as essentially an existential field. It's not just a backdrop. You also have a lot of repetitive imagery, repeated visual motifs. And I think that repetition just lends itself to the psychological breakdown that the movie's trying to push forward.
Mm-hmm.
You have scale versus insignificance. So you have human figures are often dwarfed by terrain, which is another very common aspect of Westerns. Time and time again, Westerns will show how insignificant the human actually is in the waste of nature. Taylor Sheridan's great at doing that.
Oh, yeah.
1883, 1923 are basically descriptions of how indifferent, because there is no morality to nature, but how indifferent nature is to human. And in fact, in a lot of ways, nature is depicted as a way to eject humanity from itself. Like it does not want it there. And in a lot of ways, you can see a kind of a Taylor Sheridan-esque idea being imposed in this movie where humans are a disease. They're not really a part of nature. They're an aberration. So ultimately, the film was strong. It was originally announced in September 2021. It was announced that Saban Films had acquired North American, Australian, New Zealand, South Africa, France, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and Scandinavian distribution rights. Altitude Film Distribution was handling international sales and distributing the film in the UK and Ireland. Ultimately, the movie's air quotes box office failure has to do with its distribution strategy. It just wasn't seen.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's kind of like it's a very low budget. I think it's really there with the old way when it comes to budget level and budget constraints.
Yeah, budget wise, absolutely.
And I think to that is one of the detriments of the film. And that's why when I see like certain reviewers on IMDb, you know, criticizing this film and basically saying that it was lacking in certain areas, I think that's unfair saying it basically because you're not actually looking at what the crew was given.
And also what they were attempting to make as well. this isn't the typical Western traditional sensibility. This is something a little different. It's a Western film, but its filmic sensibilities resemble more of the indie fare as opposed to mainstream Western fare.
And I like the fact that you bring up David Gallego's work, because I'm looking at it now. I'm looking at his filmography as a cinematographer. It makes much more sense why he was chosen, probably by Polsky, because David Gallego's filmography is a lot of nature element driven films.
Yeah, it's a good choice to so go with
it's, him. It's not about a Western genre. It really is about Polsky's story about nature, mm-hmm. nature versus humanity. And the Western element around it is just
backdrop. Yeah.
And that's why I basically like,
this is a human story.
Looking at like in totality of what they tried to put together, I think they did an excellent job.
Yeah.
You know, for what they were given. They went out, got a quote unquote A-list actor in Nicolas Cage. You know, he is a needle mover. They got the right pieces in there. I just think they should have, if they were to take a more of a fine tuning mindset, like what happened in Train Dreams, you honestly could be seeing something special, specially made.
I think if you had stronger producing partners,
yes,
possibly even some studio
intervention.
Studio intervention, possibly. I think the movie would have been that much stronger. But even that, you know, without that, David, I mean, the review aggregator, Rotten Tomatoes, mm-hmm. out of 61 critics, 74%. That's not a bad score,
yeah.
at all, actually. In fact, when I was surprised when I opened up Rotten Tomatoes today before our show, because I haven't looked at the score yet, I was like, oh, I expected this to be a lot lower when it comes to mainstream critics, because we know mainstream critics nowadays don't seem to really have...
They're not the best.
No, I don't want to criticize and turn our show into another, you know, diatribe on modern day criticism, but we know there are problems.
Yes.
And interestingly, David, I would agree with that. I would probably give this movie a 72% on our RMD score. The audience score is surprising on Rotten Tomatoes. It's at 50%. And
it's not. That's the thing. That's why I'm like going.
I'm wondering if it's because maybe it's not surprising. Maybe that's the wrong word to use. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised because we're dealing with regular, probably Western viewers who are looking to watch a Western. And if you are a run-of-the-mill Western fan that was just looking to push play and watch some shoot 'em up, bang, bang, train robberies, saloon shootouts.
See a Nicolas Cage freak out.
Yeah. And then you got like a psychological, philosophical, you know, film instead, I can see where people might be like, whoa, wow, what am I watching? What is this? So that could be part of the reason why there's a 50 some percent for the audience score. But yeah, 72% for me, David. What about you?
I'm actually right there with you. The more I actually, especially my score changed after the second time I watched it, because I started actually really digging into it. I got up to a 75 on this. I think it is better than what audiences think, because I think, just like what you said, audiences that look at this film and criticize, well, it doesn't know what it wants to be. You don't know. You didn't know what you were getting into, because you probably looked at it, Nicolas Cage, Western, and you were probably thinking, you know, like, Face Off, Nicolas Cage. You're probably thinking, you know, like Renfield, Nicolas Cage. Renfield. Okay. So the Nicolas Cage that we get here is more in line with what we expect from him, from, say, like him as an artist.
Yes. This is, to me, this is top notch Cage.
Yeah.
I love Crazy Cage because I grew up during the time when he transitioned from normal Cage to Crazy Cage. And now he's kind of crazy and normal Cage at the same time. But I love seeing Nicolas Cage just go back and forth.
Yeah.
And my thing with Nicolas Cage is I didn't want him to become the next Christopher Walken, you know, where you become Christopher Walken.
Yes.
And seemingly Christopher Walken has forgotten that he's actually a really good actor, but instead he has just become the caricature of Christopher Walken. And I was really afraid about 4 years ago that this is what would happen in Nicolas Cage. And it's not. He is still going to those films where he can be outlandish, but then we have smaller movies like Butcher's Crossing where he can actually sit and offer a more meditative performance.
Yeah.
I guess you can characterize it that way. Now, it may seem like we absolutely adore and worship this movie. We like what it was doing,
yeah,
and how it did it. But there are writing issues. I would say the opening act is incredibly strong. It's not until midway through the second and then bleeding into the third act where you're kind of start putting your hands and running your hands through your hair because you're like, all right, we get what you're doing and it works, but we need to move on now.
We need to move on now.
You're letting us wallow far longer than we need to.
You're making us feel terrible.
Yeah. Well, even that, listen, it's not even about, yes, I get the, yes, you're right. I don't want to feel terrible, but if you have an important message to push forward in your movie and it makes me feel uncomfortable, that's on me. I'm not going to judge your movie because of it.
Yeah.
But where I will judge is how long do we really need to sit and wallow in those dark musings? Yeah. Is it going to do any more work for us? Is it going to suddenly turn the light switch on? Or was it already on 20 minutes prior?
Exactly.
So that's the only real negative I have to say about the movie is that they could have anchored some of the abstract a bit more, given us a little more grounded conversations throughout the latter half of the second act, and then move on a bit. But outside of that, I think the movie is a very strong effort.
Oh yeah, I think so.
All right, this brings us to the end of our discussion. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Foresaid, he be taken from such prison to a suitable and convenient place of execution within said county, and there be hanged by the neck till he be dead, dead, dead. Now, do you have anything to say, young man?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. You can go to hell, hell, hell.